historia 1. Ya no hay ni pañuelos. Aguantó Luis Suárez, se fue solo.
Hello, a very good day to you all, and welcome to Eye on La Liga, Marca's Spanish football podcast, the show that's breaking down all the action and headlines from around the world of Spanish football with the deft touch of Cristiano Ronaldo, the vision of Andreas Iniesta, and the passion of Diego Simeone, but maybe with a little more fist pumping. I'm your host, Ollie Wilson, and I'm joined, as always, by two of the brightest footballing minds that Marca has to offer. First up, editor and football journalist, Mr. Jason Pettigrove. Jason, how are you, fella? A busy weekend, no doubt, with a jam-packed schedule of La Liga football just gone.
Yeah, always busy, Ollie, but that's how we like it. Good to be back talking to you again. Thank you.
It's nice that it never stops. Also on the show today, Marca football journalist Aldo Sainati joining us. Aldo, mate, pleasure to have you on the show. We also had, obviously, a busy week in the build-up to the weekend with the Champions League and Europa League draws as well. It doesn't really stop, does it?
No, it doesn't. Hi, Ollie. Thanks for having me. Lots to break down and lots of exciting football to discuss.
Well, let's kick things off with some of the headlines from the last 7 days from Marca.com. As I mentioned, we had the Champions League draw last week. Barcelona getting Manchester City, Borussia Mönchengladbach and Celtic in their group. Atletico Madrid given Bayern Munich, PSV and Rostov. Real Madrid getting Borussia Dortmund, Legia Warsaw and Sporting Lisbon. And Sevilla getting Juventus, Dynamo Zagreb and Lyon. A very difficult group indeed for Sevilla. Also from last week, we had Cristiano Ronaldo getting the UEFA Player of the Year award. But really, should Bale or Griezmann have had more of a look at that award? We will discuss that later on in the show. Griezmann has been in the headlines as well, talking about Atletico Madrid and their stumbling start to the season, saying that if Atletico keep up their performances like this, they're going to be involved in a relegation battle this season. But is it a bit overblown making these comments just 2 weeks into the campaign? Doesn't matter for Las Palmas fans. They're the league leaders with 2 weeks gone. A 4-2 victory against Valencia and a 5-1 win against Granada recently. And shocks at the bottom of the table as well, with the bottom three spots, the relegation spots, being held up by Celta Vigo, Valencia and Athletic Club Bilbao. And of course, we had the big breaking news recently on Marca.com that Borussia Dortmund superstar Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is trying to push through a move to the Spanish capital as the star looks to join Real Madrid before the transfer window closes. I'm getting too involved in the Champions League stuff already. We'll come to that later on. We'll start with Real Madrid and their victory this weekend against Celta Vigo. A 2-1 victory. Morata back on the score sheet after returning to his old club. And Toni Kroos with a superb winner. 9 minutes to go. Great, Aldo, to have Morata off the mark. Some people are saying, though, that Real Madrid struggled this weekend. And some of the pessimists are saying that they're still missing Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, I mean, I think they did have some key absences. And there's some things that aren't completely right. I mean, Celta were able to press Madrid very well, and were not able to respond as well as they would like. I think Luka Modric had a fantastic performance, and yeah, there were some key absences. Still, Keylor Navas in goal, Cristiano Ronaldo, of course, and you could see that Zidane is creating an 11 with a lot of alternatives, but you think that he would hope to have his complete squad at his disposal.
But Jason, we've seen Asensio already in the early part of the campaign and in the pre-season matches look very good for Real Madrid, and people were ringing his praises and saying that Madrid don't need Cristiano Ronaldo. One game, one slight struggle against Celta Vigo on the weekend, and suddenly everybody's completely flipped the script on this.
Yeah, I think it's important to sort of bring it back down to its sort of basic level. Any team is better with Cristiano Ronaldo in it, including Real Madrid. But what it does show, and you know, thank God it shows it, is that Zidane has now got, you know, a bit of squad depth. He's got people that can come in and still make a difference. And Asensio would be, you know, the perfect example of that. I think perhaps what the Real Madrid fans were looking for was another 7-1, which was the hammering that Celta took last season. It was never going to be that, but at the end of the day, they've still got the 3 points. So, you know, they've started the season well. I don't really know what their problem is, to be quite honest with you.
Well, it doesn't look like Morata's got a problem. He had an excellent game on the weekend. Gentlemen, the return of Morata, how important is it to just get that first goal in La Liga to get the monkey off the back, so to speak, and to hit the ground running, because there's far more expectation, don't you feel, now after he was a success at Juventus and coming back to the club than there was when he started to break into the starting 11 at Real Madrid and get his chances initially in the early part of his career before the move away?
Yeah, I mean, he gives Madrid something different. I mean, he goes hunting for the ball. He sort of draws defenders out of position. He's a much more mobile sort of centre forward than perhaps Benzema is. Both quite different, both good in their own way. But I think at the end of the day, you know, strikers are paid to score goals. So in order to get that first goal, as you say, it's probably given him a confidence boost. In a similar way to when he was selected for Spain, it's just, you know, nicely off the mark quickly. And I think, you know, if and when Benzema comes back, Morata still knows whenever he comes back in, he's liable to score goals again.
Aldo, have you seen a change in Morata since what he was at Madrid and what he is now coming back?
I mean, I think that there's a lot of continuity, actually. His first week, Real Madrid's opener against Real Sociedad, I think that we saw him running the channels very well, falling into wide positions and kind of a lot more of a solo role. And I think that we're seeing more of a continuation from what he's done at Juventus. And I think that that's a pretty intelligent move from Zidane in order to make sure that that he feels important, that he feels a part of this squad. Because as we know, once Benzema comes back, there'll be some decisions made there. But I think that in terms of scoring his first goal, like Jason said, that's the most important thing for any striker. But in terms of performance, I saw a much better performance in week one than on Saturday night against Celta.
And I suppose as well with this Real Madrid side, we've got Zidane, who's now well and truly kind of comfortable in the role after... I mean, there was pressure on him going into the Champions League final. If he didn't pull that off, then perhaps there was going to be a new face in the dugout at Los Blancos this season. And not only that, he knows he's got big-name players that can come into this side. You touched on the depth, Jason. I'd just like to get both your thoughts on Madrid in these first two games. It's not perhaps been Madrid at their effervescent clinical best, but there is so much more room for improvement when star players like Ronaldo, when Benzema's back in the starting 11 as well. There's so much more adaptability and improvement in this side. It looks a much stronger outfit on paper this campaign, and two victories to start the season has been the perfect start, of course, for Zidane.
I think what Zidane has, he has the total respect of not just his players, but of the club. I mean, I think this is the first time in a while that they haven't gone after a Galactico signing in the summer transfer window, and that would appear to me to be because Zidane, he doesn't want to upset the equilibrium of the side. In terms of their first two games, you know, okay, so, you know, they've not thumped anyone, but they've won the games. And I don't really understand how, you know, when you're at the top of the table, be it just not at the very top on goal difference, how anyone can be disappointed with that if the perception is that that's not with your strongest 11 and you have, as you say, big players to come back.
And perhaps big-name players to come in as well, Aldo. Aubameyang trying to push through this move that he's always wanted to Real Madrid before the transfer window closes in the next few days or so. Interesting as well that Aubameyang, obviously a Dortmund player, Dortmund drawing Real Madrid in the Champions League, is itching to get this through and perhaps come to the Spanish capital.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, given Aubameyang's Spanish past, I think it's on his mother's side. He's, you know, traveled to Spain before and been in near the capital and to see his family and everything. I think that, you know, there's definitely some sort of connection there that shows that the player does have a willingness. He does have this ambition to make that last jump. Right now, of course, with Morata and Benzema, you can maybe make the argument that there's no room for a player of his caliber. But, you know, right now it does seem that he does want to push a move through.
Do you really think that's the case, though, Aldo? Do you not think it's possibly the agent sort of throwing his name into the hat? Because, I mean, you just said it there yourself, Morata, Benzema, arguably Aubameyang's not going to get a look in.
Well, I mean, I think it goes back to what you said about Zidane being comfortable with the squad and perhaps not needing that big-name signing because he thinks that there are very few improvements to make to a Champions League-winning squad. So, I mean, he is obviously a top quality player and would add another dimension to Real Madrid's attack. And I mean, from that center forward position, you can just imagine him with Ronaldo and Bale on his flanks. But, you know, like you said, he's you know, it might be more the willingness of the player than the willingness of the club.
All right, let's move away from Los Blancos, and there's still more transfer speculation to get into with Barcelona. Potential signing of Paco Alcácer in the next few days from Valencia could be wrapped up in the next 24 hours in theory, but they had an excellent 1-0 win against Athletic Club Bilbao on the weekend. Rakitic away from home with a bullet header on 21 minutes to do the damage for Barca. Get them the 3 points. They are two victories from the opening two games. No Neymar, no problem here at the moment for Barcelona.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've seen Arda, you know, very criticized in his first season at Barcelona, his first half year. You know, it seemed that he wasn't fitting in well, and he's shown that he wants to be a part of the squad. He's fitting in for Neymar very well, has had an excellent preseason. And, you know, I think he's definitely enjoying that more advanced role. And I think it allows someone like Luis Enrique to be able to, you know, have two separate formations. You can have a 4-3-3 and a little bit more of a 4-4-2 when Arda's taking that left wing position rather than Neymar.
Yeah, and what you said about Rakitic, Ollie, I mean, I think he's only doing what he's always done. He provides sort of depth back in the defence and a lot of support to the front men as well. And he scores sort of fairly important goals. Obviously, there was the one in the Champions League final in 2015, there's been a handful of others. I think it was 15 million euros, it may have been pounds, but, you know, whichever it was, he was obviously very cheap. And he is a player that, you know, they're like gold dust, and Barca are very lucky to have him.
Do you think, I mean, Rakitic was important last season and very much an integral part of this Barcelona side, but do you think there's going to be a little bit more impetus put on using Rakitic as, you know, Iniesta's starting to wane slightly in his final few years at the club? Do you think they're going to kind of almost pass the baton on to Rakitic to be that player?
I don't think that that's going to fall on Rakitic. I think we'll have someone like Andre Gomes and Denis Suarez, rather, who will take that left midfield position from Iniesta. You know, and he has, as a, you know, within the captain's role, he's going to have to help oversee that transition into these new faces. And I think that something that Luis Enrique has been noticing is that he's having difficulty finding someone that can do the defensive work of Rakitic in this sort of shuttling role that we've seen him do so often these past few seasons. And, you know, with the departure of someone like Dani Alves, he's had to adapt as well. So I think that, you know, more so than Iniesta, I think it's someone like the right back position with Dani Alves and now Sergio Roberto who will define sort of how Rakitic has to play.
And I think what also defines his excellence as well is that he always seems to be in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. You know, you at one point you don't know he's there, and then all of a sudden the ball's up in with the attackers, and yep, Rakitic is right behind them to support them. And it is just back and forth. The energy that guy has is incredible from first to last.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we saw, you know, bringing back to the Athletic Bilbao game, he was very important in sort of from deep positionings. He was important overcoming Athletic's high pressure. I mean, we saw Ter Stegen having to have so many touches and complete so many passes because Athletic was playing so far up the pitch. And I think that Rakitic, in a sort of like Luka Modric did for Real Madrid, he had to, you know, with his dribbling skills, you know, push up the pitch in a way that would help break that opposition press.
You mentioned Ter Stegen as well. Wasn't it great to see that? I mean, I think that it was a La Liga record of passes completed, but when there's been so much focus on Bravo having been sent off to Man mm-hmm. City, and obviously this time last year Ter Stegen had a nightmare at San Mamés when he was beaten by Mikel San Jose from almost near the halfway line. Apart from one or two instances yesterday when, you know, poor clearances, he looked mm-hmm. composed, he looked assured, he commanded the area. I thought that was a very, very impressive performance.
Yeah, I perhaps see it a little less positively than you would have put it in your in a very good article that you published on the web called Ter Stegen Lasers Goes to Rest. I recommend everyone check that out if you haven't already. But, you know, I think that we're seeing the team had to play in a very within their own defensive third. So I don't know if that's a good sign in terms of the where Barca had to play out from the back. Normally you see Busquets being the one that distributes play to the wings and sort of recycles play. And Athletic was able to push Barca so far back that they, you know, basically were doing that from within their own box. And, you know, obviously...
Arguably, you're going to get teams that are going to come and do that. But, you know, people know how Barcelona play. So in order for them to perhaps get, you know, just an extra few percent, that's what's going to happen quite a lot this season, I think, now. You are going to get people pressing fast and high.
Yeah, and I think that that means that we'll see something that we saw the first year Luis Enrique was in charge. We'll see the front three have a lot more space to be able to counterattack because the opposition's pressing so high up the pitch. But yeah, you know, with Ter Stegen's performance, I think that you see obviously a very technical goalkeeper that's gifted and is just like any other outfield player. But at the same time, there's some decisions that he's made as, you know, being a very young keeper, more the tactical side of things that, you know, you sometimes wonder, you know, is he really that much better with his feet as someone like Bravo, who, you know, perhaps is less, you know, less aesthetically pleasing a player, but is able to kind of transmit that security.
So you're a little more skeptical about the move of Bravo to go to Manchester City, of course. And so do you think Barca will have to perhaps bring in another top class goalkeeper just in case Ter Stegen has a few wobbly moments? I'd love to know both your thoughts on the Bravo move itself.
I think it's a good move. I mean, if you look at all of the players that Barcelona have brought in this summer, they're all young players. And so they're definitely moving towards having a more youthful squad peppered with some experience. Bravo, okay, for a keeper, he's probably not that old, but he was still 33, and they got more money for him than they actually paid for him when they brought him from Real Sociedad. Ter Stegen's got a lot of growing to do. He's only not in the German national team because Neuer is above him. So, I mean, I think longer term, it's certainly the right decision. In terms of backup keepers, I mean, obviously they've brought in Cillessen from Ajax. And again, you know, from what I know of him, he's fairly decent with his feet. Probably does need to, you know, step up a notch now he's joined Barcelona. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's a good decision.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, Jason. I mean, I think getting rid of Bravo was, you know, the current situation was unsustainable. You had someone like Ter Stegen brought in to be the future. And, you know, Bravo, I think, is a player that did something very difficult in that he exceeded the club's expectations when he was brought in. And so I think that Bravo leaving to City is not a major problem, but we will see this increased pressure on Ter Stegen. And, the club itself is fine with him taking these risks because that's how Valdés did it. That's how they did it before that. And they're, you know, playing out from the keeper with his feet is obviously part of the club's identity. So you'll definitely continue to see that. But, you know, we'll have to see how Ter Stegen grows up, like you mentioned, how he, how his decision-making does change, you know.
It's worth just mentioning as well, I can't remember which year it was, but it was when Real Madrid took the lead at the Santiago Bernabeu in the first, I think it was about the first 20 seconds, as a direct result of Victor Valdez's mistake. A ball came back to Benzema and they scored. And yet not more than 2 or 3 minutes later, the ball came back to Valdez. He was being pressured again by, I think, Benzema and maybe Ronaldo. And most people at that point would just hoof it long and just get the ball up. And what did he do? He passed it through straight to Busquets. So Barcelona, in terms of their identity, will never change. And Ter Stegen, you know, he needs to get, or he has got used to it, but he just needs to improve upon that as he goes forward.
I suppose it is all part of the 24-year-old's kind of development and learning from those mistakes as well, because learning from the mistakes is the easiest way to basically counteract and get those parts of those weak points out of his game. I do just wonder with the arrival of Cillessen, to me, he doesn't come up to scratch. He hasn't got the same potential that Ter Stegen has. don't think he's as good at passing out from the back as other people would say. And I still would have thought that Claudio Bravo would have been the right guy to keep hold of, while Ter Stegen is still prone to making some of these mistakes rather than putting him in the limelight in the first team role straight away this season. I think it might be just a touch too early. I guess we will see. There's transfer movement as well still about Barcelona, because as I mentioned, Paco Alcácer from Valencia set to arrive in perhaps the next day, perhaps in the next couple of days, but before the transfer window comes to a shut. And it moves us on to Valencia and the battle at the bottom already, with Celta Vigo, Bilbao and Valencia all struggling. Out of these three sides, gentlemen, which is the one in the most amount of trouble? Celta have lost a big player in Nolito. Valencia have got half the squad from last year almost walking out the door, it seems, and going to various places around Europe. Bilbao have kept hold of people, but it's just not clicking at the moment in the start of the new campaign.
I think Valencia are the ones that are going to be in the most trouble, to be honest. I think they've lost so many people at the beginning of this season. Andre Gomez, Pablo Piatti, Alvaro Negredo, Mustafi's gone to Arsenal. Alcacer, as you say, has passed his medical and on the verge of joining Barcelona. And the keeper, Alves, could be on his way out as well. You can't have that happening at the very beginning of the season. And the fact that they haven't got any points really just shows what a mess the club's in at the moment.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that to add to everything that Jason just said, you're also looking at a club deep within an institutional crisis, and just the sense that they're not at where they were a couple years ago, and you know, the growing sense that this is a selling club now. And I think that their biggest problem is quite clear, in that they just are wasting too many chances. They need someone who, you know, like Alcácer, can score those goals. And, you know, they brought in Santi Mina and Nani, but these aren't players that are going to get you 20 goals a year. So I think that right now we're seeing that they're just, you know, really struggling, especially up front.
Do you not think that Paco Ayestarán has been put in a really difficult position then? Because people wanted him out before the season even got begun this season. He's at a club where Valencia, as you say, the fans and it seems the board have an expectation of them still being Valencia, but they then strip almost every single useful tool that he has at his disposal, Ayestarán, away from him, and he's already under pressure from the fans as well. He's almost in a lose-lose position where he's never going to get anything right, and he's never going to get the chance to get anything right.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree 100% with that. And I think the problem stems from the top. You know, Peter Lim has allowed... He's come out and said that the club needs money. Obviously, ever since Nuno Santo went and they didn't qualify for the Champions League, things have gone from bad to worse. But if you want stability, why are you getting rid of arguably your best players? I mean, Andre Gomez is a fantastic player. Paco Alcácer, although he'll only be fourth choice for Barcelona, is a good striker, and he will give Barcelona something extra. But you can't, as you say, you can't possibly have a manager that's there that doesn't have the tools to do the job and then expect them to perform miracles. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, and bringing in Munir into a situation like that is questionable, to say the least. A young striker, 20 years old, I think. And, you know, he's going into that situation trying to fill the shoes of Alcácer, most likely. You know, there's very little upside, and I don't think that the responsibility that is going to fall on his shoulders is something he's going to be able to cope with at this early stage of his career.
Yeah, he's going to absolutely love it, isn't he? Being turfed out of the Camp Nou, where he's just starting to break into the first 11 at times and get used off the bench a fair bit, and suddenly chucked in to Valencia and the mess that's going on there. Talking of clubs that lose players, Atletico Madrid normally end up losing a big name striker at the start of every season, but they've been able to hold on to Antoine Griezmann this season. They've even added as well with Gamero. But Griezmann coming out after the first two slow starts to the campaign for Diego Simeone's side and saying that if this side continue to play this way, they're going to be involved in a relegation battle this season and there's no chance of a title shot at all. You can understand Griezmann's frustration at the poor start to the season. They drew 0-0 with Leganés on the weekend. They blew a lead against Deportivo Alaves to start the new campaign after Gamero got the penalty in the 90th minute that seemed to seal all 3 points for Atletico Madrid. It's been a far better transfer period for Atletico coming into this campaign. It all seemed like they were ready to take a next step and push once again to be involved in the title race and make sure they can be the third team in that race. It's not started off brightly. Griezmann's comments, though, just seem a bit unnecessary 2 weeks into the season, just heading into an international break, when the media, obviously, we're going to pounce on anything that we can get out of these players, and such brash, harsh comments as these are always going to attract negative attention.
Yeah, I just say it's heat of the moment stuff. I mean, he's obviously frustrated because he really hasn't done very much since he's come back. But at the end of the day, you know, they've got a tough September coming up now. They've got to put all that to one side and sort of get their head down and work, because a hard August, if that then becomes a very difficult September for them, then there are problems. I mean, already we're looking at, I think it's only once in the last 20 years, a team that hasn't won either of their opening games, hasn't gone on to win the title. I think the only team that bucked that trend in the last two decades was Guardiola's Barca in 2008-2009. But it's important that Simeone came straight out and said that Griezmann's opinion should be respected, even if he doesn't agree with it. You know, he's spoken from the heart with a bit of passion, and you know, at the end of the day, he just wants everyone to, you know, up their game and get them back to where they should be.
I think that the comments are very much in line with the type of club that Atleti is, and you know, you mentioned Simeone, and this is something that you know makes sense given the type of club they are. And I mean, maybe I'm looking at this in a different way, but I think that this is the sort of wake-up call that they needed. I think that, you know, seeing how little they've created in front of goal these opening two games against relegated sides, newly promoted sides, this is something that, you know, they needed to hear. And I think the fact that it's someone like Griezmann, someone that they've come to rely on for goals, I think that this isn't a coincidence. You know, here's a player that ever since Diego Costa left, he's stepped up, right? And, you know, up front, you've seen this lack of goal-scoring threat, and this isn't a new problem. So I think that we've seen that at times last season as well. You get the sense that they're not going to score more than one goal per game, and so you're under the impression, well, are they going to be able to sneak one in or not? And a lot of times that responsibility falls on Griezmann. And so far, Gamedo needs time to adapt, and while they're waiting on his abilities and his goal scoring record to kind of click, you're going to see a team that needs these goals from somewhere, and they're just not creating enough opportunities. So I think that, seen in that light, that these comments are necessary, and I think the fact that it was Griezmann making them really emphasizes that fact.
I think if a manager made them, everyone would view it as it's a manager trying to prevent a side that's had, you know, success in the last few years from resting on its laurels in any way, shape or form, and thinking, you know, two Champions League finals, a league victory, and of course Copa del Rey win a few years ago against Real Madrid as well, which is without a doubt considered success, especially when you're battling against Real Madrid and Barcelona week in, week out, to even get anywhere near a title race, and obviously battling through the Champions League as well. To stop a side resting on its laurels and getting used to success and perhaps going into a season without really the desire to push and kick on and improve and keep battling all the way through. And I think if Simeone had made them, there'd be less hubbub about it. I think it's because it's Griezmann, people will think that there's unrest there, that perhaps he might still have wanted to go this summer despite staying at the club. There was plenty of rumours that he would be leaving this summer. So I think it would have been better if Simeone had come out and said this rather than Atletico Madrid's star forward. Gents, Las Palmas, is it going to be La Liga's version of Leicester City?
Boy, how they've started the season. 9 goals scored in 2 games. And with signing Kevin Prince-Boateng, who wants to obviously prove to everybody that he's still got the necessary skill set. Yeah, I think they could, you know, surprise a few people. They've got some decent other players. And, you know, even if, as we might expect will happen, that they'll sort of gradually fall down the table, you know, they can't have started any better than they have.
Yeah, I think last season, actually, we saw when they switched managers to Quique Setién, the team really started to take shape. And right now, they're a very solid team like Leicester. But obviously, they're coming from a different place because last season, they've already kind of gotten their foothold back in La Liga. You know, they've only recently made their return to first-flight football. And, you know, after about a decade of being in the second division, really suffering as a club, you see that they're off to this fantastic start. And I think a lot of that is down to someone like Quique Setién, who's really understood, you know, this canary way of playing and an attractive football that we're seeing so far. And another key player to kind of keep an eye on is someone like Roque Mesa, who at the end of last season was doing a very good job from defensive midfield. And I think, you know, with the addition of someone like Boateng, who at first may seem a little weird, but, you know, is a player with quality, I think that a lot of things are fitting into place. And the team does have enough quality to make a top six finish even.
If he stays happy, Kevin Prince-Boateng, he's a fantastic footballer. When it all starts to go a little awry, then the sulking starts. It might be a very different picture in a few months' time. It'd be great to see if Las Palmas can stay up there, though, for as long as possible. Gentlemen, we're drawing towards the end of the show. I need to talk to you, though, about last week. Ronaldo, UEFA Player of the Year. Should Bale or Griezmann have perhaps walked away with it? Does this perhaps rule Ronaldo out of picking up the Ballon d'Or as well? Or do you think it's a sign that he is going to then... after winning, obviously, the Euros with Portugal, having a great season, winning the Champions League last year with Real Madrid, and not able to really participate in the early part of this season, so he doesn't get any sort of negative press about his performances, this is going to be him going towards the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, I mean, we've had this conversation before, Ollie, haven't we, about we've never really understood the criteria fully for Ballon d'Or. You know, arguably, it's an individual award, but it seems to be that if a player's done something good for his country or his team, so, for instance, the Champions League or the Euros, that then gives, you know, in this case, Ronaldo, probably puts him as favourite to win it. Should Bale or Griezmann win it? I mean, Griezmann's probably done more for Atletico Madrid over the last year than Ronaldo's done for Real Madrid. If you look at it in terms of scoring goals, there's always the argument, apart from once or twice, that Ronaldo hasn't stepped up against the big teams. But again, at the end of the day, he's a Champions League winner. He's taken his country to the Euro 2016 title. I can't see past him for this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's an individual award for a collective game. And, I mean, What ended up happening with both of his teams taking those titles is clearly something that will most likely lead him to the Ballon d'Or win. But I'd say that I would actually consider giving it to a player like Gareth Bale. I mean, we saw his incredible run of form at the end of last season when Ronaldo had injuries before the, you know, Champions League semifinals and finals. He really carried Real Madrid in the league as well. And I think he was their most important player in 2016, and he was, you know, giving a lot of continuity to the attack and was, you know, just the focal point while Ronaldo was injured. And we saw that continue into the Euros. He obviously had a very successful tournament with Wales, bringing them to the semifinals. And, you know, without him, there's no question that they wouldn't have made it that far. So I think that if you look at their importance to the team, you can make the argument that Gareth Bale deserved it more than Cristiano Ronaldo.
Maybe Bale was set to get given the award and then decided that UEFA should just give it to Cristiano to keep him happy, to stop any fallouts and to keep a bit of a nice team chemistry at Los Blancos. Finally, gents, the Champions League and Europa League draws were made as well last week. Quick thoughts on those. Barcelona getting Manchester City, Gladbach and Celtic. Won't be a really easy group, but they should get through. Atletico, as we said earlier, getting Bayern Munich, PSV and Rostov. Madrid drawing Dortmund, Legia Warsaw and Sporting Lisbon. And Sevilla with a really interesting group of Juventus, Dinamo Zagreb and Leon as well. Any slip-ups, any stumbles for the Champions League sides from Spain, do you think?
Well, I mean, if we look at it sort of historically and recently, I mean, obviously Barcelona have generally beaten Manchester City. I mean, Pep goes back there with City this time rather than with Bayern. He knows what to expect from when he went back there with Bayern. So, I mean, those two ties can be interesting. I think, obviously, with those two, you've got the top two in the group there. I don't see Celtic troubling anyone in the group. Mönchengladbach, you know, I don't really know too much about them, but, I mean, I'm still going to sit with Barca and City for that one. Atletico's group, PSV last year, was a very hard-fought 0-0, through on penalties. Obviously, again, they played Bayern last year in two cracking games. Real Madrid don't tend to do too well in Germany. I think there was a time they had 25 ties in Germany and I think they lost 18 of them. They've done a bit better recently, the 6-1 against Schalke and 4-0 success away to Bayern. But, you know, lost to Wolfsburg. I think they've scored 85, conceded 85 in their all-time record against German teams, winning 20, losing 20, and drawing 9. So that's not going to be a particularly easy group, but you have to fancy Real to go through. And then lastly, Sevilla beat Juve at home last season. Juve took them, obviously, in Italy. I can see Sevilla getting through, perhaps as runners-up in that group.
You've been doing the stats work, haven't you, Jason? You've certainly been pulling out the facts and figures from somewhere, that's for sure. Aldo, it's the toughest group for Sevilla, though, out of all three of the sides in the Champions League, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm maybe a little less optimistic about Sevilla's chances, but I just get the sense that they'll finish third and then make a run in the Europa League again. But, you know, going back to the other couple of groups, I think that we saw a very even draw. There weren't any major group of deaths. And, you know, I think that that's sort of the nature of the tournament now. And I think it's changing. We have those rule changes coming up in 2018, I think. And, you know, you get a lot of big matchups with, you know, Real Madrid, Dortmund that has passed, that has some sort of past there as well. You have Barcelona City. You have Bayern against Atleti, all matches that are, you know, high profile and you know, that we've seen these past couple of seasons. But at the same time, you just get the sense that it's harder and harder for the other teams to kind of take away a top two finish. I mean, if Barcelona or Madrid don't finish first in the group, you get the sense that they'll finish second. So, I mean, I think that the tournament changes might be necessary. I don't know if they're going to be enough to kind of change this, the nature of this competition.
It will be interesting to see how the Champions League continues with the top four leagues, getting four teams guaranteed in the Champions League in the future, but four already from La Liga in the Champions League draw. Difficult draws for some of those sides. The Europa League draw as well, Celta Vigo, Ajax, Panathinaikos and Standard Liège. Bilbao getting Genk, Rapid Vienna and Sassuolo. Difficult Italian side, Sassuolo, with got a bit of giant killing in them, that's for sure. Villarreal getting Star Bucharest, Zurich, and Turkish side Osmanlispor, which should be interesting indeed. Gents, that's about it for all the La Liga news from the last 7 days or so. Spain in action, of course, the friendly against Belgium, and then the first of the World Cup qualifiers against Liechtenstein coming up in the next few days. Spanish side without Casillas, but with Diego Costa and Juan Mata back in the squad. Be interesting to see how that goes along in the next few days, that's for sure. So we'll all be keeping our eyes on that. A pleasure to chat all things La Liga with you. We'll be back in about 7 days' time or so with a look back at the national team's exploits in World Cup qualification. And of course, as I say, that very difficult friendly away against Belgium. But Jason, Aldo, thank you so much for taking time out from your busy days with Marca to have a chat with us here on the podcast. Really appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Ollie.
Thanks, Ollie. We'll speak to you next week.
And, of course, be sure to stay on marca.com/EN for all of your Spanish footballing news and debate. And, of course, remember to follow @MarcaInEnglish, all one word, on Twitter for breaking news and updates as well. Until next time, adios, and enjoy the Spanish football.